Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. I really appreciate those of you who listen to our podcast, and really appreciate those of you who are giving 5-star reviews on Amazon and iTunes. That helps other people find us and find out more about our podcast, and we really appreciate that. One of the things we want to do here at Gospel Tangents is to create some high-quality documentaries. That requires resources. We'd really appreciate it if you'd help donate to our website at gospeltangents.com/shop, where you can also purchase a transcript if you'd like. If you have a Kindle, think about purchasing a transcript on our website on amazon.com as well. With your help, we can create some documentaries that will help you and your friends learn more about Mormon history, more of the deeper kind of stuff, not necessarily the stuff you'll see in Sunday school. So this is really important to us, and we really appreciate your support. Mormons practice baptism for the dead. This is one of the most unique things in all of Christianity. What were the events that led Joseph to inquire about this practice? Dr. Richard Bennett, a BYU professor in church history, talks about these events. They started in Kirtland, although a lot of the events also happened in Nauvoo. Let's listen in on our conversation. So it was in Nauvoo that we got a lot more of the temple ordinances that we're more familiar with. We got baptism for the dead, although I guess the first baptisms for the dead were done actually in the Missouri and the Mississippi River, because the Nauvoo temple wasn't completed. We also got the full Nauvoo endowment, whereas it was more of the preparatory things in Kirtland. Can you talk about the evolution from Kirtland to Nauvoo as far as temple worship happened and ordinances?
That's a big topic. Which ordinance do you want to talk about? Baptism for the dead?
Sure, we'll start with baptism for the dead.
Well, the saints started building a temple in the Far West and dedicated a spot in Adamondiaman too. Brigham Young did, for the building of a temple. To the best of my understanding, those temples, had they been built, would have been very much, and the Jackson County Independence Temple, had those temples been built, they would have replicated much of what you saw in Kirtland. The one of the key developments between what happened in Far West, or shall we say in Kirtland, Far West, and Nauvoo was going to be the experience in Liberty Jail. And this experience of the saints who are being driven east from Far West to Quincy in Illinois in 1839. This period is extremely difficult for the saints. They're being driven out by order of the governor. Where are they going to go? Joseph Smith's in jail. And Joseph Smith receives several wonderful revelations in that jail temple of what we call Liberty Jail, in preparation for what's going to happen, including sections 121, 122, and 123, which were reclaimed again, put in 1876. But as you read Joseph Smith's letters and study his life and his revelations in that period of time, we're talking what? Approximately 6 months in the winter of 1838 and 39, he's a transformed prophet. He's not the same coming out as he was going in. There's an awful lot that he learns in this period of time, in this time-out period, that has a great impact on the Nauvoo temple temple ordinances. One of which is going to be baptism for the dead. The origin of baptism for the dead is a mystery. We don't know where and when Joseph actually comes to grips with this ordinance. We know that back in Kirtland, that revelation that he had, that vision of Alvin, we know that it happened, and where he wonders how it is that Alvin is in the celestial kingdom and he had never been baptized. Was this the opening bell of baptisms for the dead? Many scholars think so. Guy Bishop, one of the fine scholars, argues this point, so do others, how is it that he got in the celestial kingdom and he was never baptized? Well, baptism still had to be performed. Was it therefore, that was that one of the foundation points for the baptism for the dead? Possibly. When Joseph Smith escapes from Liberty Jail, they come to Quincy, and then up they go the river, up to the Mississippi, and in the summer of 39, as you recall, what's happening to the saints that are trying to settle in commerce? Well, if you know your history, there's an awful lot of sickness and death. Some 60 die that summer alone in Nauvoo. And
that was because of malaria, the malaria outbreak? Is
yeah, and the riverborne infestations and what have you, the swamps and what have you. And eventually, even Joseph Smith Sr. is going to die. But he comes down sick in 39. Don Carlos is going to die in 40, his brother, Joseph's brother. Several others are going to die. The statement at the Seymour Brunson funeral in August of 1840, it's coming out of a context of death. The great exodus east from far west to Quincy, and so many became sick and died out of this. Far more so, frankly, than we've given credit for. When Joseph, interestingly enough, gives this revelation on baptism for the dead, it's at a funeral. And there were many who were dying. And so there's this context of death. And where do we go for an answer to this scepter of death? And it's in that context where Joseph Smith will reveal the baptism for the dead, a salvific response to the horrific deaths that are occurring. Where and when that began, we don't know, but it is pronounced and announced in that kind of a context.
Now, as I recall, Alvin, did he die about 1823?
Yeah, he dies in 23.
So, if my memory's correct, you know, Joseph was had the first vision 1820. He's going through. Alvin was a big supporter of Joseph's prophetic gift. And then he died. What I understand is from bilious colic is what they called it back in the day, and they gave him some mercury to cure him, which ended up killing him. Yeah. The cure was worse than the disease in that case.
Well, that was often the case.
Yeah.
Bleeding, bloodletting, things like that killed more people than anything.
Yeah. Well, what I understand was, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe might have been a...
Excuse me.
No, you're fine. It might have been a Presbyterian minister who said that, well, Alvin was never baptized, so he's going to hell. And so that offended Joseph Smith Sr., and so that was one of the reasons why he never joined with any of those Protestant churches. Are you familiar with that story,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
am I getting it right?
No, you got it right. William Smith speaks of this.
Okay.
William Smith is our source for this, the brother of Joseph Smith. Richard Bushman speaks abundantly of this in his book, Rough Stone Rolling. Sam Brown, Dr. Sam Brown, in his work on early death in Mormonism, speaks of this in a beautiful study. The Presbyterian minister saying that Alvin had lost his soul because he had died without these blessings and ordinances did not go very well with Joseph Smith Sr. It's reasonable to suppose that this was a factor, but it's impossible to prove that. It is certain, though, that Joseph Smith Sr. himself is sick and dying in 1839 before Joseph Smith reveals baptism for the dead. And he dies within days or a few weeks of the announcement. And Joseph Smith is clearly thinking about his father and perhaps of Alvin. So you wouldn't want to dismiss this as immediate factors for it. But you can't say for certainty yet. We haven't found anything yet where Joseph Smith says, well, this is where I came up with this idea. It was a process of revelation. We talked about the reclamation of revelation. We have to think about the progression of revelation, too. What is the answer to the Hans Mill massacre? Joseph now is not just leading a church. People are dying at his... for his religion. The ante goes up in his mind. You know, it's one thing to believe in what I'm telling you, but people are now giving their lives for it. The Missouri conflict and conflagration, all those who died, the sickness, the death, David Patton, all the rest, those young boys and men at Hans Mill. Well, what's my answer to this? What's the Lord's answer to this? And I think Joseph was asking the Lord very carefully. He said, we're having a H of a time. What are the answers to this? And I think that's where you have to see baptism for the dead coming out of a much bigger context.
These are wonderful insights. It's fascinating. Primarily, there was no work. There was not really very much work for the dead in Nauvoo.
Except that, of which there were thousands. And like you said earlier, they began first in the temple, in the river, and then eventually in the wooden font in November of 41, which Brigham Young dedicates, and then eventually that's replaced by the actual font in the Nauvoo temple. So, I mean, baptisms for the dead is a very big thing in that Nauvoo temple, which had nothing in Kirtland like that.
Okay. So, and I understand that originally that, like Elijah Abel, I believe, was baptized on behalf of his mother. Because back then they didn't really have all those rules. And I believe it was Brigham Young who changed it and said, no, you need to be the same gender for the person you're being baptized for.
That's right. But going back to baptism for the dead, Joseph Smith in section 128, in one of his talks there in Nauvoo, which was later canonized, talks about baptism for the dead being the linkage between generations. Remember this. He talks about it as the great link. Well, baptism for the dead isn't a sealing in that sense. You know, we never think of a baptism for the dead as a sealing. But he talked about it as the great link of families. And so you can't dismiss baptism for the dead as something that wasn't a sealing. In Joseph's mind, baptism for the dead is more than just doing the ordinance for that person. It's a linkage of the generations in some way that I think needs to be further explored in our doctrine and our history, and kind of laid the foundation for the later doctrines of sealing generations one to another. But it all starts with this foundational ordinance of baptism for the dead. There's a sealing emphasis on that. Elijah.
Yeah, well, that kind of goes back to Elder Bednar's talk.
It goes back to Elder Bednar's talk.
He talked about that.
But you don't think of that baptism for the dead as an ordinance, a sealing to the family. That's something else. But you couldn't have sealings of one generation to the other without baptism for the dead. So you have to see it as a foundational cornerstone to the later doctrine of sealing. You see what I mean? Which I think needs to be further explored in our history. I think that's an area that we could explore further, the doctrine of sealing of the dead in baptism for the dead, sealing of families.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion about baptism for the dead and visions in the Kirtland Temple. In our next conversation, we'll talk to Dr. Mark Staker. He'll talk about the Kirtland Bank. Why did Joseph think that the saints in Kirtland needed a bank in the first place?
While they're going out there, they go through New York and they visit Wall Street. They see these trains. They see all this industry going on, and Oliver Cowdery's writing back these letters and suggesting that banking is something of interest. Exactly how that congeals in their minds, what it is that they plan on doing, why, what is it that they see that leads them to this decision. They come back with the idea that they need to have a bank in Kirtland.
I hope you'll tune in to our next conversation with Dr. Staker. For more information, please subscribe to our website, gospelchanges.com, where you can purchase a transcript of this podcast for just $3. You can also get one on Amazon.com. Please subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube to get an updated interviews. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll continue to support us here at gospeltangents.com.